I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My guest today, Rosalind Franken, is an inspirational speaker, author, and proud cancer survivor who knows about the power of positivity and emotional resilience in the face of adversity. Her mother survived the concentration camps of Nazi Europe, and her father survived the Nagasaki atomic bomb as a prisoner of war in Japan. At age 56, her mother was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and with an amazing keep-going attitude, lived for 21 years, where she was only given 2 years tops to live. Her father suffered a massive heart attack at age 67, and with his never-give-up attitude, lived till age 94, when he was told he would be lucky if he made it to 82. When diagnosed with cancer at age 29, Rosalind turned to her parents' positive keep going and never give up attitude as inspiration for her fight against breast cancer and become a long-term survivor. At 39, 10 years after surviving cancer, and at her heaviest weight, Rosalind had enough. She decided that as a cancer survivor, she could not allow herself to continue gaining weight and potentially putting herself at risk of cancer and other diet, lifestyle, and weight-related diseases. How she lost her weight and changed her life was outlined in her self-help book, The A-List, 9 Guiding Principles for Healthy Eating and Positive Living. In giving presentations about the A-List book, Rosalind mentioned her parents' life as well as her cancer journey. And so Rosalind wrote her second book entitled Meant to Be, A True Story of Mighty Miracles and Triumph of the Human Spirit. A documentary was made about her parents' lives, and Rosalind's book, Meant to Be, is currently being adapted for production of a feature film. Rosalind is also co-author of Death Can Wait, Stories from Cancer Survivors, a fundraising book for cancer research and cancer patient programs. She has been a guest on numerous television and radio shows and featured in newspapers and magazines across North America and abroad. Rosalind has a master's degree in human systems interventions from Concordia University in Montreal and certification in organizational psychotherapy with a focus on executive coaching through the Professional School of Psychology in California. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Rosalind, and I look forward to hearing about your cancer journey. Now, first, would you tell us about when you were diagnosed, what symptoms you had at the time, what your diagnosis was, and what the doctor gave you as a prognosis?
Oh, well, what happened was, it's kind of perhaps a little unique. I didn't really have all the classic symptoms. What happened was I was actually at a beach party for a company I was working for in Florida, and I went to bed that night, had a great night, and woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning with my neck so swollen and painful I could hardly lift my head up off the pillow. And I had eaten lobster the first time in my life that night, and I thought I was having an allergic reaction because that's what I thought. But I went to a clinic, and then they ended up sending me to a doctor, and they thought maybe I had a virus or mono, like maybe swollen glands, but this thing in my neck was not going away, was getting bigger. And finally, I was sent for an ultrasound. And Carl, I got to tell you what happened there, because that was an unbelievable experience. The person, the technician doing this ultrasound, all of a sudden walked out of the room. Didn't say a word. Didn't say anything. And I'm lying there by myself wondering what, you know, is she done? Mm-hmm. Is she finished? Mm-hmm. Like, should I be getting up? And then in walks the chief radiologist and takes over the ultrasound wand on my neck and continues and then just says, oh, dear. Oh, boy. Mm. Like that.
Mm.
And now I'm thinking, okay, so I said to him, okay, like what's going on? And he sits me down and the most plainest of voices just says to me, well, it looks like you have lymphoma, but we won't know till you get a biopsy. We'll give you a call to schedule a biopsy. And he walks out of the room.
Mm-hmm.
And I was 29 years old at the time. And to be honest, I didn't even know what lymphoma was. Mm-hmm. It was just not even something that was on mm-hmm. my radar at the mm-hmm. time. Can you imagine that? Mm. Like, isn't that cold?
Yeah, it is.
I couldn't believe it. And then as I was walking out, I asked him and said, I saw him in his office and said, what exactly is lymphoma? And he says, oh, it's just cancer of the lymph nodes. Don't worry. Don't worry about it.
Mm.
Like that. And when I had the biopsy surgery and then met with the surgeon, and he told me that I had Hodgkin's lymphoma. He said, I have good news and I have bad news. And he said, the bad news is, yes, you have cancer. So, of course, you know, you hear that C word and you're, mm-hmm. you start shaking inside and going, oh, my God. And then he said, but you have Hodgkin's lymphoma and you should be fine. You should be fine. You need, you know, we need to treat it and hopefully all will go well.
Mm-hmm.
Stage two Hodgkin's lymphoma. And when I came out of that biopsy surgery, I asked the surgeon because I was in so much pain. He said they didn't realize how deep the tumor was in my neck, but it was actually resting on the main artery to my brain. So mm-hmm. They had to dig through so many layers of muscle just to get to it. So in answering all those questions, that's how I was diagnosed. That's how it happened. And needless to say, it was an absolute shock. I was only 29 years old at the time.
Mm-hmm. And what year was this?
This was 1995.
And what was his prognosis then? The one that did talk with you.
Pardon me?
I say the doctor that did talk with you.
Yes, the one that did basically said that, you know, if I can get through the treatments and get through 5 years, I would be considered good to go. If I get through 10 years without it coming back, then it should be like I never had it, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, aside from the possible long-term side effects from the chemo that I had, it would be like I should be good to go. So obviously, you know, 5-year mark, it's woohoo, okay, I'm still mm-hmm. good, okay. Then 10 years, it's like, a big sigh. So now it's been since 1995, so we're going on 20...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
22 years, 23 years, October
right.
17th.
Mm-hmm. And what did he recommend then, the surgery and the chemo?
Yeah, the surgery. So they had to take out the tumor and then chemo. And the chemo, that was a journey in itself. You know, I would imagine that the way chemo was delivered or how chemo is today might be a little bit different than mm-hmm. it was all those years ago. But it was pretty tough at the start. It got better because they had to see how my body reacted to the chemo. And after the first few treatments, I had so many miserable side effects that they mm-hmm. had to space it, put more time in between the treatments so mm-hmm. that my body had a little more time, because I guess everybody's different, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what did you decide to do then as in addition to the chemo? Did they offer you things to do that would reduce the severity of the symptoms?
You know, it's remarkable when I think back that no, it was basically go to your chemo, here's your appointment, and there you go. And there was nothing. I had no other support in terms from the medical establishments, and I was on my own and mm-hmm. just had to figure it out on mm-hmm. my own.
So what did you do then, Rosalind?
Well, I adopted a belief that may or may not be, you know, I wouldn't know how to prove it, but I believe that stress is a huge factor in our body and our mind's ability to heal and overcome something that's not supposed to be there in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took it upon myself to say, okay, how am I going to get through this? And used more of a self-reflection and looking at my own choices and what I was eating, how I was living. I mean, you know, constipation was one of the side effects at the start. I had mouth sores. I lost my hair, so many different things. So physically and mentally and spiritually, I had to find my own ways and my own journey. Through all of that, I really found ways to manage my own self. It was all about self-care as opposed to, you know, the doctors giving me options or offering me different ideas. It was me finding my own way through my own approach to self-care. That's really what it came down to.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us some of the things that you found? Because that's always helpful to listeners that are going through it and having the same symptoms, because the majority still select chemo and they still have the same symptoms, and most of them do not get much guidance as to what to do. And I'm trying to get more on my website as to what people can do for this, but it helps if they can hear what someone did that went through it. So what did you do for the nausea, vomiting? What did you do about the hair loss? What are some of the strategies that you had for dealing with the symptoms?
Well, what I found is that because the symptoms are physical and so outside of your control, like they're going to happen no matter what mindset you have, the physical things are happening. And for me, I took an attitude of like, what can I do to feel some sense of control? So when I say that, for example, when you're losing your hair because of the chemo and you all of a sudden you take a shower and the drain is filled with hair, or you wake up and there's hair in your pillow and all of a sudden you look in the mirror and you know your hair is getting thinner, there's blotches coming out. It's such a, you know, it doesn't hurt. It's not painful, but it's so disheartening because it's part of your appearance. It's part of who you are and you're losing this hair. And for me, to be honest, I just said I would rather just take a shaver and shave my head bald than keep watching it come out and deal with it that way. For me, that was a very significant, if you want to put it, you know, like message to the universe that says, oh yeah, you're going to, you know, have me lose my hair. Well, I'm going to get one up on you and I'm going to take it all off myself. And I was very strategic because I knew, especially back then, I find that nowadays you see a lot of, you know, women, especially they're, you know, you see them with a ball cap or you see them with a kerchief on their head. But back then, you know, you wore a wig. That was just the thing. And what I did is I had longer hair at the time, and I knew my hair was, I was going to lose my hair. And I thought, to me, when a woman has a short hair wig, it doesn't look as, you can kind of hide it if you have layers, and it's not as obvious if it's a one length wig and it just looks like it doesn't move. Like I wanted it to look more natural and not draw as much attention. And so what I did is I cut my hair short. I got a nice short hairstyle. Like I went to a specialist person who makes wigs, and I tried on different wigs, and then I said, okay, I'm going to get a haircut that looks exactly like this wig. And that's what I did. I got a short haircut. Everybody got used to seeing me in short hair. And then when I transitioned to the wig, I mean, I remember one time going to the bank and a lady asked me, my God, who cuts your hair? That's a beautiful haircut. Who's your hairdresser? And I'm thinking, you know what? If I come back in a week, in a month, it's going to look exactly the same. So, but again, that was my sense of saying, you know what? I'm taking charge of this situation. I can't stop this situation from happening, but I can be proactive in how I deal with it.
Now, so, you talk about the influence of your parents. And I think that this probably had something to do then with your persevering. And they have such an interesting story that would you tell us the story of your parents and how that prepared you for this? And then we'll come back and see about some other of the symptoms.
Absolutely. My parents were extreme and continue to be extreme role models for me and the people I share their story with about resiliency, about perseverance, about willpower and inner strength and all these positive qualities that we can embrace within ourselves. My mother was in the Holocaust. She survived the concentration camps of Nazi Europe. She was 15 years old when she was taken from her home by the Nazis and was forced apart from her parents and her two brothers and one of her sisters and never to see them again. And then she was in the concentration camps and suffered just unimaginable cruelty and starvation and malnutrition and slave labor and so many horrific things that she endured. And at the same time, my father was born in the Dutch East Indies, the former Dutch East Indies, and was drafted into the Dutch Navy Air Force at age 18 and was then taken by the Japanese to become a prisoner of war in Japan for 3.5 years. When he passed away last year, he was actually the last survivor of the Nagasaki atomic bomb in all of Canada. Mm-hmm. And a documentary was made about their story. And I've written a book about their story because it's so powerful. But how it influenced me in terms of fighting cancer is that my parents went through hell and back in their youth. And then later in life, they faced life-threatening health setbacks. My mother faced cancer at age 56. So when she was told she had cancer, she had a rare form of cancer called primary peritoneal cancer, which is in the lining of the abdomen. That was in 1983. And with the strongest chemo at the time, they gave her 2 years tops to live.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for people listening, it's so easy to feel like a victim and to look up and say, why me? And feel sorry for yourself and think of all, you know, like how this is, you know, upsetting your life and things like that. And when you look at what my mother went through, she would have had every, I don't want to say right, but I think people would be very understanding if she took that attitude, feeling sorry for herself and want to throw in the towel. After all she went through, now she has to face cancer. So my mother's attitude was, she basically said to the surgeon, she said, you see this number on my arm from Auschwitz? She said, Hitler didn't get me. My cancer won't get me. I have too much to live for. You want to talk about what I call the power of conscious choice, the power of attitude. For her to have said that, and the doctors, you know, have a huge file on my mother, not understanding how she could have survived, not just 2 years, but she lived for another 21 years.
Mm-hmm.
And her cancer came back 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
And if people ever asked her how she was doing, she would say in her little Dutch accent, she would say, me, I'm like the Energizer batteries. I just keep going and going. And that was a mantra that lived on in my head. You know, I learned that from my mother, and they taught me that from a young age, maybe not saying the exact words, but just through their actions. But no matter what happened, what they faced in life, you pick yourself up and you keep going. And my father, too, he didn't have cancer, but he did have a massive heart attack at age 67 and had quintuple bypass surgery and was told that if he gets 15 more years of life out of it, he'd be doing well. And he almost doubled that. He lived for another 27 years. Mm. And his mantra was, if you asked his secret to longevity, because he died at age 94, he would say it's about appreciating every moment and never give up.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, when you grow up with those kind of mantras, it for me, when I was told I had cancer, after the obvious initial shock and fear and all the emotions that you go through, I had to take a step back and think about my parents and how they faced their life-threatening health setbacks, how my mother faced cancer and how I saw her go through her treatment and how she dealt with it and, you know, the ups and downs and the highs and lows. And I thought, you know, if she could get through this with everything that she went through, then I can follow in her footsteps.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And that's how they influenced me with their strength. And, and, you know, people listening might say, well, my parents weren't like that, perhaps. And I say, well, you know what? Then you seek out people who can inspire you. And hopefully hearing about my parents or hearing about my story or listening or reading or surrounding yourself with positivity and inspiration, you need that to keep your hope alive, to keep things going. So that's how my parents influenced me. I hope I answered the question.
I think a lot of times, too, it's a motivation because you've got something to do. Because my mother had cancer of the cervix of the uterus when I was in high school. And she went away to the hospital that was about 100 miles away. And she said she knew that the doctor She knew the family did not expect her to live, but when she came home, our family doctor told her he didn't think she'd live either, to get to the hospital. And she said, well, I had to. I had three children that I had to get home and get through high school. So she had something she had to do. And I think that's what brought her through. But she lived for probably 30, 40 years after that.
Amazing. I love hearing those stories. Like, like what you're saying is like what my mother said, I have too much to live for.
Then Rosalind, what other things then did you do? You said then you did wear the wig for your hair. You cut it all off. Did you change diet? Did you pray? Did you meditate? Did you experience gratitude? What all did you do? And what did you do for some of the other symptoms, if you remember back?
One of the big things that happened to me was self-image. Like, oftentimes, you know, we see ourselves in a certain way, and I always saw myself as a person who can handle everything on my own. I don't need anybody to help me. And what happened to me was one day, all of a sudden, Carl, I just remember myself being home alone in the living room, and I just started crying. I just had a big, big boohoo, and like, the tears and the crying like was coming from a part of my body. I had no idea where this was coming from, what it meant, but it was just, I guess, cathartic. But I thought, like, what is this? I didn't understand where it was coming from. And I realized there were so many things that I was doing that what I call caused self-inflicted stress. I started to break things apart as to how I was living my life and how those things may have either contributed to my cancer or how those things could make my healing through the chemo and everything, like getting through it, how it would burden me or you know, not be helpful is what I'm trying to say. So what I want to share, and I hope it answers that part of that question, is that there were certain attitudes that I had in my head that I had to really, really examine. And just to give you an idea, is as a person who's extremely self-reliant, and I know a lot of people, men and women especially, you know, we don't want to be a burden on other people. We don't want to always speak up. We don't want to say what we need. And we just think we have to do everything on our own and be the martyr. And what happened to me was I was taking a city bus going to my chemotherapy treatment because my husband at the time, notice how I say at the time, he's not my husband anymore, but he didn't think enough of it to take time off of work to take me to the hospital or make arrangements for someone to take me. And it didn't even occur to me to ask a friend for help. That's how pathetic. I look back and I think, how low was my self-worth? Or what was I thinking? To take a city bus when your immune system is down because of the chemo, it's a really stupid thing to do because you're on a bus and you're holding on to the rails and you're all these other people and coughing and sneezing and, oh my God, what was I thinking? And thinking, oh, well, you know, I can't afford to take a taxi all the way to the hospital. So I took a bus. And then one day, somebody, a friend of mine, called me and asked me, you know, how are things going with the treatments and how are you getting there? And I told her I was taking a bus. And she was, are you crazy? She goes, no. She goes, when's your next treatment? I will take you. And that somebody offered to take me, my gut reaction to that was like, oh, no, I'm fine. Because I thought, oh, I don't want that person to take time out of their day, and I don't want to be a burden on them. And then I had this epiphany, and I hope somebody listening will get something from this in case they're anything like me, because I don't think I'm that unique. And all of a sudden, I thought, wait a second. When my friends are going through a hard time, I'm the first one there to want to be helpful to them. I want to be there for them because it gives me pleasure. It makes me feel good to be there for somebody else. And I thought, maybe she's doing this. She's offering this because she genuinely wants to help me. And I have to let go of my need for all this self-reliance, my need to think that I don't need anybody to help. And all of a sudden, I thought, you know what? I'm going to graciously accept her offer. And that was a big turning point for me, that it's okay to be human. It's okay to need other people. It's okay to reach out for help and support from other people.
I think, Rosalind, sometimes we develop the self-reliance as a defense mechanism because we have been hurt in the past. And we have developed low self-esteem as a result of being hurt. And so we develop the self-reliance, which means you're not going to hurt me again because I'm not going to let you close enough to do that. And I think many of us have gone through that. And I think that the cancer process have helped a lot of us to overcome that. And one person that helped me a great deal was a woman named Louise Hay. Do you know that name?
Yes.
Louise Hay has a book that helped me called You Can Heal Your Life. And she had been abused physically, sexually, everything else as a child. Grew up, had very low self-esteem, took jobs that didn't pay anything because she wasn't worth anything. Attracted husbands that beat her because she felt she wasn't worthy. And then she developed cancer and did a complete about face. And then she wrote a book and helped a lot of people overcome. She developed all kinds of technique to help overcome that. Like I remember one of them, you look in the mirror and you say, I love you, your name, just as you are. You say that over and over again. And it does make an effect, have an effect. If you do these things over and over and over, you know, after a while, you know, your self-esteem goes up and you're willing to take more chances and let down some of the guard and be less self-reliant. And I think the cancer process has probably helped a lot of people to do that.
Well, I would say that was the first time that really, really hit me was in that moment when she offered that. And I, you know, I had examples of that before, you know, like of my parents, you know, were able to reach out for help and support. But at the same time, it was part of who I was and letting go of perfectionism, that I don't have to be perfect all the time. You know, there's so many attitudes that I realized. And, you know, in terms of managing the physical symptoms, I just really adopted an attitude of I have to get through this. And it's just sometimes there is going to be pain. There is going to be discomfort. There is going to be fatigue. And you have to listen to your body and just let things be. Let your body take its course and have a fighting spirit. But at the same time, if your body needs rest, then rest. If you need to be uplifted, then my God, you know, I remember I celebrated my 30th birthday with a wig on my head going through chemo, and we went to a comedy club. Because I think laughter is a wonderful distraction. It's a wonderful release of tension. It's uplifting. It gets, you know, combats those stress hormones, puts you in a much better physical state and mental state and all of those things. And also, I mean, the book that I wrote is called Meant to Be, because my parents believed so strongly that things happen for a reason. And I struggled with that, because I think, why would there be a reason for me to have cancer? And I try to focus on all the good things that came out of it, obviously. And, you know, I feel very blessed to have survived and gotten through it the way that I did. But on a spiritual level, you know, sometimes there are good things that can come out of things that don't seem like they're good in the moment that you're going through them. It's being able to look back 5-10 years later and connect the dots sometimes and go, wow, if this didn't happen, then this wouldn't have happened. And so on that level, I do believe that it was something that for whatever reason I had to go through, and it did make me stronger. And there were good things that came out of it as well. I know that's hard for maybe people to hear when they've just been diagnosed or they've just had a really miserable day. But, you know, and another thing I want to mention is that when I went through it, I didn't belong to any support groups. Nobody offered me or said, you know, they're at, through the hospital or nothing. And something I learned about myself and also about friendship is how many people in your life who you think are going to be there for you and maybe aren't necessarily, and then other friends who come out of the woodwork, or even new people who you meet who become your support network. It's really fascinating, just human nature of who's up to the plate and who doesn't, and you know, the less expectations you have, sometimes the better.
Well, I agree with your parents that everything happens for a reason. And also, I believe that when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And so some of the people may drop out of your life and other people come into your life. And I think that part of life is learning and teaching. You know, we learn from other people and we use that information to help other people. You know, sometimes people get messed up and they aren't in the mode for helping people. But I think cancer, again, turns people around. Almost everyone I've talked with that's had cancer wants to help people, you know. And I think that, they may have wanted to help people before, but I think it's almost a passion after they've had cancer that they want to help other people. And they want to share what they used and what they did. So I, you know, someone asked me once, why did you have cancer? And I said, because it allowed me to help other people. You know, there's nothing like having an experience to be able to help other people. Now, I worked for many years in public health nursing where I was going out talking with prenatal about having a child, preparing for the child. I went out and helped them bathe the child, develop the formula for the child, all kinds of things. But of course, I've never had a child. But it's helpful to have gone through the experience in order to help other people. And I think that my cancer was an opportunity for me to develop some skills that I didn't have so that then I could help other people with this. I mean, as a nurse, I've always wanted to help others. And, you know, I got very involved with the homeless population for years and had a grant for almost $1 million and provided primary care. And so I think that nurses have that desire, but with the cancer, it became a passion that hadn't been there before.
You know, it's interesting as I'm listening to you and I'm thinking about my journey even after the cancer, because 10 years after my last chemo treatment, I got on the scale one day and saw I was at my heaviest weight. Mm-hmm. And had an epiphany, I guess you could say, of just saying, you know what, this doesn't make sense. I've already had cancer. My mother had just passed away from cancer. I've got heart disease on my father's side. Like, what am I doing? This doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I had just graduated with a master's degree in human systems intervention, which is about helping people self-learn and change. And I got my coaching certification. I'm going to go out in the world and help people make positive changes in their life. And I thought, how can I put myself out there as this change agent when I can't even fix what was going on in my own backyard? And that backside of mine was getting bigger. Mm-hmm. So I thought, you know what? I need to relook at a lot of the things that I had learned through my cancer experience and refocus on a lot of the attitudes that helped me get through the cancer and the lessons I'd learned, and realized how important those lessons were in overcoming my weight issues, because the same things of, you know, letting go of perfectionism, because every person who goes on a diet, you know, everything is black and white. It's all or nothing. I'm either on or I'm off. They're trying to be perfect all the time, and that fear of failure and all those things that I learned through my cancer journey, I was able to apply through my weight loss journey. And I wrote a book called The A-List, 9 Guiding Principles for Healthy Eating and Positive Living, which is more about the weight loss. And in the presentations and workshops that I was giving to teach people about that book, which is more of a self-help book, I very briefly talked about my cancer, very briefly mentioned about my parents. I had this feeling of, like, you know, I don't want to talk about my cancer experience, because if I talk about it, it's going to awaken something, you know, like, or it's going to bring bad luck, or, you know, I don't want to tempt fate or awaken the gods, or whatever. I don't know how to put it, but, and I didn't talk too much about my parents' story either. And after my presentation, even though I was talking about more, it was more about my health and weight loss journey than anything else, people would come up to me after and say, oh my God, when you talked about your cancer or your mother's cancer and you talked about what your parents went through in the war, oh, we want to hear more about that. And I realized, you know what? That story is pretty incredible. And I could be helping. It's almost selfish not to talk about it. And I realized, I need to share that story. It only happened years later that I wrote my second book where I talk more about the cancer journey part of it. But it was, it's almost like thinking of if things happen for a reason, maybe I had to, you know, put on all that weight to lose the weight, to write the book, to give these presentations, to get that feedback, to open up the door to sharing more about the cancer journey and being willing to talk about it and share about it and help other people and help inspire people with my parents' story, with what they went through. So again, you know, I could actually think of it that way, that even that journey was meant to be, so to get me to where I am now. And who knows what the future holds? It's not even on the radar.
Right. Because here I am, I don't know how old you are, Rosalind, but I'm 85, and I don't have any intention of stopping anytime soon, so.
Well, me neither. I'm a few years younger than you. I'm only 52, but I'm a very healthy and happy 52, and a much more, compared to where I was when I was going through my cancer treatments in terms self-worth, in terms of assertiveness, in terms of confidence, in terms of being willing to overcome the fears and just saying, you know what, I have so much to offer and I'm not going to worry about the same stuff that I worried about before the cancer. Like what you worry about, what you focus on, your appreciation, so many things, for me anyways, changed as a result of the cancer. And that when you talked, one of the questions you asked me was gratitude part of it. And gratitude I live by that, is appreciating all the good things that I have in my life and how grateful I am. I remember going on a cruise with my husband in the middle of January and, you know, being from Canada originally, in the middle of January to be in, you know, surrounded by palm trees and water and sun, it's a pretty nice thing. And I remember sitting there, you know, we had just on the cruise ship and I just started crying, tears of not sadness, tears of like, oh my God, I'm so blessed. Like, thank you, God, you know?
That's what I was thinking when you were talking, that gratitude is pretty close to one of the types of prayer, and that is thanksgiving. You know, I think that we think a lot about prayer as what I want, you know, which is one type of prayer, but there's prayer of thanksgiving. There's other types of prayer, you know, that we can use, and some of the spiritual attributes are very close to that.
Interesting, yes.
Now, I wanted to ask you, how long then did it actually take before you overcome? And did it take beyond the chemo, or did it end at when you stopped chemo, or how long did it take to overcome the cancer?
Well, it was 9 months. All the chemo treatments were over the course of 9 months. And so after the 9 months, it was decided that, okay, you're good to go. We're going to, you know, keep checking on you. I think I met with the doctor every 6 months for quite a while, and then eventually it was every year. And I just seemed fine. You know, I spoke once. I gave a presentation at it was an interesting seminar. It was at a children's hospital where child cancer survivors were now getting older, and they were transitioning into the adult survivors. Right? So they're going now to the adult hospital. And one thing I do remember was this gentleman was saying how he had brain cancer. And he said, for him, a headache will never be just a headache. And that stuck with me. So even to this day, you know, if I get pain in my neck, obviously your mind goes to that place. So, you know, that doesn't necessarily go away, but I think that very rational and logical and understandable and being aware of your body and any aches and pains, you do need to be aware. So, I mean, the chemo was done. I'm cancer free. I'm just living my life to the fullest. And when I do get any aches and pains or anything, you know, that really worries me, I go to my doctor. I don't hesitate to go to my doctor because I want to know if there's anything wrong. Let's just face it and deal with it. I don't want to pretend that there's nothing wrong, because you hear of people who, you know, oh, I should have gone sooner to the doctor. I should have gotten it checked out, or I should have had a blood test, or I should have this, I should have that. And I'm a big believer in, you know what, I don't want to live with regrets. And so I would say that's my attitude, but my focus is on living life to the fullest, but knowing I'm a cancer survivor. I just want to share one story with you. I would say maybe a year after my last treatment, a friend of mine invited me to a women's health seminar. And I'm very interested in health and obviously cancer prevention and anything I could do. And I went to the seminar and they were talking about, you know, eat this, don't eat that, do this, don't do that. And it was one thing after another. And then they started showing statistics about if you, you know, if you've had this type of cancer, your chances of getting this other type of cancer is this percentage and that percentage. And I said to my friend at that point, I said, you know what? I need to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, why? This is so interesting. I said, you know what? I am already eating healthy. I exercise. I manage my stress. I try to live a healthy, happy life and make good choices every day. What more can I do? And to have this knowledge of like, oh, great, now I know that this, you know, increases my chances because I had this type of cancer. I can't do any more than I'm doing. And that was my attitude. You can, you know, like you take supplements or you whatever you need to do for your specific case. I was already doing it. So I think you have to find a balance between, yes, you don't want to have cancer again, or, you know, in my situation, having gone through it, and you read and you get informed and you pick and choose what you're going to do. But at some point, you also have to live your life. You can't be consumed with making that your whole life, where the stress of trying to be perfect in doing everything right and perfectly, that I believe that stress can be more harmful than the occasional piece of chocolate cake.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. I think that some people that I've talked with are so focused on recurrence. I don't understand that, because once, to me, it's almost a lack of faith in God. And I know
that's a good way to
God, fear is always the opposite of faith. And I believe that God would let me know if I had a recurrence. I never thought about recurrence in the 43 years since I had lung cancer. I don't have time. And I think that that's a big part of it. I think that if you put yourself into helping others to the point that you don't have time to think of yourself, that's good in a way. But you, as you say, you have to also live your life. But you also have to develop the attitude, I can't do everything. It's like, with my background in public health and prevention, I know all the ways to, or most of the ways to prevent cancer. And I review the research every Sunday and I select a couple things and I put on my website. But, and I've just finished my 9th book, which is all on preventing cancer. But I know I can't do everything. You know, I feel like if you do the best you can, then that sways the balance. But you don't have to do everything. It's like, you don't have to have everyone, we used to say, you don't have to have everyone immunized to prevent a disease in a population. If the majority are immunized, then the few people that don't, are they aren't able to pass it on from one to another, if that makes sense. I know a lot of people are opposed to immunizations now, but it's the same concept. You can't personally do everything. Like, I eat organic. I don't eat genetically modified foods. I eat a plant-based diet. I haven't eaten beef in 45 years, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I drink bottled water. I don't want to drink the chemicals in the faucet, out of the faucet.
Yeah.
And I haven't settled on a filter system that I like yet. So I get bottled water and I drink that. I know that the BPA can leach from the plastic into the water and that's a carcinogen. But you can't do everything. You do the best you can do, which is what you said earlier. So
Yeah. That's
just re-emphasizing what you said earlier, that you do the best you can do. And then God will take care of the rest.
That's all you can do. That's really all you can do. And again, it's the stuff that's within your control. It's the choices you make. To me, it's like, if I can go to bed every night and feel good about the choices I made in the day, and not that they're lying there going, oh, I shouldn't have had this, or I shouldn't have eaten that, and I shouldn't have, you know, drank this or that, then that that's a good thing.
Right.
That's a good thing for people, you know, who I look at it like, well, you know, if you had a heart attack and you were a heavy smoker and you choose to continue smoking when you know that you're just really doing something that's going to increase your risk and you're not willing to even try to stop, that's your choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's
mm-hmm.
your choice. But if you go to bed every night and go like, God, I really should quit. I really should quit. Then, you know, maybe it's time to just really make that happen. Make
right.
the choice. Sometimes just making the decision is sometimes the hardest part, because once you decide it, then you've made the decision, and now it's like, okay, what am I going to do next?
Mm-hmm. We're getting near the end, Roslyn. So at this point, I would like you to, again, tell us, I think it's three books you have, and also tell us about the books. I don't think you have products, do you? But you have services, and then website, and how the listeners can reach you?
Absolutely. So my most recent book is called Meant to Be, A True Story of Might, Miracles, and Triumph of the Human Spirit. A very inspirational book, and it tells the story about what my parents went through in the war, you know, how they survived, what they survived, how did they meet? Everybody wonders that. And, you know, how did they end up living such a positive, meaningful life despite the hardships they went through, and then in overcoming, you know, my mother with her cancer and my father with his heart issues.
Mm-hmm.
And then also I talk in that book about their influence on me as the daughter of these two survivors, and especially when I was going through my cancer journey,
mm-hmm.
and how it influenced me in that. And a lot of important lessons, and also bringing it into all the things that are happening in the world today. So that's a very meaningful book. And that book is actually being adapted to a feature film. So whenever I sign a book for somebody at a live event, I secretly have this wish, like, boy, one day when the movie comes out, they'll
mm-hmm.
say, I have a copy by the author, you know, the book that the movie's based on. And I speak about that story, because that's my goal, is sharing about that story as an inspirational speaker. The audiences who love this are predominantly faith-based audiences of
mm-hmm.
different faiths,
mm-hmm.
whether, you know, any faith, because it's universal messages that come from it. So faith-based groups, students, seniors, all kinds of community groups, service clubs, even corporations, because, you know, what one can learn from determination and courage and all the things that is needed even in the business world, especially if you're an entrepreneur. So that's what that book is about, and the services and speaking and doing the live events and book signings, of course, at those events. And then the first book I wrote, as I mentioned, is called The A-List, 9 Guiding Principles for Healthy Eating and Positive Living. And in that book, it really outlines how I was able to tackle my weight issues, reprogram my relationship with food and my inner self in terms of self-worth and all those things that are applicable not just to, you know, if you're looking to lose weight, but also the mental weight and spiritual weight we carry around with us that weighs us down in our lives. So it's how to live a healthy, happy life in many, many ways. And I do presentations about that as well. I also do weight loss coaching. It's not as much a focus as it used to be, but I still do those things on a limited basis. And then the other book I wrote is called Death Can Wait, Stories from Cancer Survivors. I'm just one of 4 main co-authors, and then the rest are all other people who survived cancer who contributed stories to that book. And that is a strictly fundraising book, and that one is only available on Amazon. My other books are also available on Amazon, but they're also available on my website, which is meanttobe.today, www.meanttobe.today. So meanttobe.today. I would love to say my other website address, which is roslynfranken.com, but I've got one of those names that's a little tricky to spell. So meanttobe.today is the simplest way to find me online.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Roslyn. I've enjoyed talking with you, and I know this will be inspirational for the listeners, and hopefully will reach those who need to hear the message.
That would be wonderful. And people can always call me on the telephone as well. I know people, you know, resist the good old-fashioned telephone, but sometimes hearing a voice is a good thing, too. So that's on my website as well, 813-803-0155.
Great. Thank you. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show, and I hope some of the information will be useful to you. I invite you to my websites, holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all shows for the past 7 years under the blog. You will also find much of the research on natural ways to deal with cancer and other health conditions, and can sign up for my free monthly newsletter. On my website, beatlungcancer.net, you will find many of the 135 interviews from radio and television over the past 2 years about my book on treating lung cancer naturally and holistically when I was diagnosed 41 years ago next month and given 6 months to live by traditional medicine who offered chemo and surgery. This book was published in November 2012 and was a bestseller on Amazon. You will find endorsements of the book, a place to buy the book, and an earlier one from 2007 titled Healthy Holistic Aging, A Blueprint for Success. On my third website, you will find information on the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation, begun last year and currently in the phase of completing the website. This site is at www.holisticcancerfoundation.com. Information on how the foundation differs from others, board members, research on holistic natural ways to deal with cancer, including mental and spiritual interventions, interviews with cancer physicians and survivors, and more. If you would like to donate to the work I am supporting, there is a tab to donate, and I can offer you a tax exemption receipt if living in the United States. I also invite you to join me on Facebook at my Facebook page, www.facebook.com/CarlHelvey. On my Holistic Health Show page at www.facebook.com/pages/Holistic Health Show, and the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation page at www.facebook.com/beatlungcancernaturalalternative. On LinkedIn, I invite you to join me under my name, Dr. Carl O'Helvey. On Twitter, I invite you to join me at www.twitter.com/HolistHealthShow, HolistHealthShow. I wish you a great week, and I look forward to having you here in 2 weeks. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host.